92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
Hello, and welcome to the 16th episode of Ancient Warfare Answers. My name is Jasper Oorthuis. I'm the editor of Ancient Warfare Magazine, and with me today is the assistant editor, Murray Dahm. And Murray is going to answer Robert's question, how crap was the late Roman army, really?
nice paraphrasing. Well, I'm going to be controversial this time around, and like we've seen in lots of other ancient warfare answers, what was once upon a time an easy answer in saying late Roman legionaries were crap and they got beaten by the Goths and then almost beaten by the Huns and then Rome fell, that answer actually, as so often, is far more nuanced and complicated and complex. And I'm going to say that late Roman legionaries weren't as bad as they say, and that there's a whole pile of mitigating factors into why Roman armies are defeated in the way that they are in the 4th and 5th centuries AD. The first thing, of course, is that the reforms of Diocletian, which changes the well-known army that we know from the High Roman Empire into the Comitatus and the Limitani armies, where you've got armies on the border, and then you've got campaigning armies within particular provinces of the empire that would respond to invasions. And there's always been the idea, and then of course you've got the Palatini troops who accompany the emperor himself. And you've always had the idea that the Limitani troops they're paid less, yes, and that they're terrible. And then you've got the Comitatus troops who are better, and then the Palatini troops who are, you know, better still. And the issue then, of course, becomes that when these armies are defeated by the Goths, so when the Goths invade over the Danube in 376, they are immediately able to defeat Roman armies, probably made up of Comitatus troops as well as Limitani troops, as soon as they arrive. And why is that? Now, certainly immediately after they're defeated, there's a whole number of texts, Ammianus being the most famous, but also people like Vegetius and even the De Rebus Bellicus, the anonymous pamphlet, that say, who's to blame? Discipline is blamed, individual commanders are blamed for misbehaviour. And what seems to have happened is that Roman troops really have become quite complacent, and that the empire has fought wars, and through those wars has become, in a way, disrespectful of the tribes north of the Danube. And when they come into the empire, the emperors and the generals think that they're going to basically be a smorgasbord of troops, that they're going to just be able to choose troops from, and that's going to fix all their problems. There's been manpower shortages is another thing that gets blamed in the 4th century. And so the issue then becomes, if that's the case, why are you losing battles to these supposedly barbarian troops who aren't very good, but you were quite willing to employ them as your troops? So there's all sorts of weird stuff that sort of is going on there. And yet in the 4th century there have been several successful campaigns by very aggressive emperors. And so I think the fact is that when the barbarians come across, we're told that they've been, you know, they're starving. Whether they brought their weapons with them, we're not sure, but some sources say they did bring their weapons, others say they surrendered them, and then outside Marcianopolis they steal the weapons of the Romans and then arm themselves and defeat an army outside Marcianopolis, which I think was unexpected. The idea there, of course, was that the generals were going to put Fritigern and Alavius to death inside Marcianopolis and therefore cut the head off the snake and leave the Goths leaderless. Fritigern escapes, and that, you know, the Goths then sort of break out into revolt and are unstoppable. And so that's the normal picture, and that the Romans are unable to stand against them. And of course, then the Battle of Adrianople, where everything goes wrong. You know, the worst day in Rome's military history since the Battle of Cannae in 216 BC. But at the same time, in the Western Empire, the Romans are successful against a different tribe of Goths, the Germanic tribe, the Alemanni. So it's like, well, that's they are fighting successfully there. At the Battle of the Willows in 377 AD, the Romans form a testudo with their entire front line. So their entire army forms a testudo, and the Goths bash away at it for a long time, and they're able to hold their own, even though the Goths probably outnumber them, and they have a reserve, which basically means that battle's a draw. And so when commanded well, and when disciplined again, the Romans can hold their own at the Battle of the Willows. What then happens, of course, is the Battle of Adrianople. And at Adrianople, the Romans advance towards the wagon lager of the barbarians of the Goths, and there's, you know, the sources we've got on Adrianople, there are hundreds of them, and most of them don't tell us much. Unfortunately, it's all a disaster. It's framed in most of them in religious terms. The Emperor Valens was an Arian Christian, and the Goths also were Arian Christians. Why Valens welcomed them into the empire is because they shared a faith. Of course, Nicene Christianity, what we know as Catholicism, becomes the main Christianity. But because Valens is Arian, his loss at the Battle of Adrianople is blamed on his heretical faith, which doesn't really help us as military historians to understand what happened. And certainly doesn't understand, were the Roman soldiers bad? Because not many of those weren't Arian Christians. They were all faiths, ended up dying. But what seems to have happened, of course, is that the Roman cavalry is defeated. The left wing of the Roman cavalry hasn't actually turned up to the battlefield. They're still on the way, which again is the complacency angle, possibly, or ill-discipline angle. The right wing is all just bad luck. The right wing is driven off by the Goth cavalry that returns like a thunderbolt from the mountains, according to Ammianus, which then leaves the Roman infantry advancing against the Gothic wagon lager. And they are surrounded firstly by the Gothic cavalry, which, as we saw in an earlier Ancient Warfare Answers, are mostly mounted archers and mounted javelinmen, yes. And so they are basically able to pepper the Roman infantry from all sides. That makes the Roman infantry squish both from the left and the right, so they can't wield their weapons, according to the sources. Then more infantry pour out of the wagon lager. So essentially the Roman infantry are completely surrounded by Gothic infantry and cavalry, and so they are sort of cut down. And is always painted that they were worse soldiers for doing that. There are other problems. You know, Valens perhaps was jealous of his nephew Gratian defeating the Alemanni, and therefore decided to fight the Battle of Adrianople alone without Gratian's help, even though Gratian was on his way to help. If the two had combined their armies, the outcome may have been very different. And so I think that the Battle of Adrianople is hubris, and it's a lot of sort of not underestimation, because by that point the Goths have won at least four battles against the Romans. So if they're still underestimating the Goths, then they've got no one to blame but themselves. But I think it's also an interesting one in the sense that if you want to read it as the Goths drawing the Roman infantry towards their wagon lager, and, you know, that the troops that burst out of the wagon lager, according to Ammianus, surround the Romans, and then the cavalry is also surrounding them. It's a perfect double envelopment again. And so it's a very interesting way to read that the Goths may have actually used Roman success against them, that they, you know, they're advancing to the walls of the wagon lager, that we're winning, we're pushing the Goths back. Suddenly they're surrounded by Gothic infantry and Gothic cavalry, and it all goes pear-shaped. We don't know because, of course, soon after the Battle of Adrianople, Theodosius is made emperor and he makes peace with the Goths and basically hires them into the Roman army en masse. So you have a vast number of Gothic troops suddenly serving in the Roman legions. So they can't have been terrible soldiers. They must have been respected. And even before the Gothic invasions, the Goths have been used by Roman generals in Roman armies. So the argument that they were poor soldiers doesn't fit. And at the same time, therefore, if the Goths were respected soldiers, the Romans fighting the Goths can't have been terrible soldiers because, yes, they're defeated, but they do hold their own for a long period of time. You know, one of the other things about the Battle of Adrianople is that the killing is only brought to an end by darkness. So they've fought for the entire afternoon in high summer. You know, ninth of June, I think, is the date for the battle. So they do hold their own and they do fight and hold their chin up high, but they're outnumbered and they're you know, eventually cut down. So it's not, that's no sort of comment on their quality, I think. It's more that they underestimated their enemy and hubris. You know, there's another complaint that they weren't wearing armor. Vegetius makes the comment that, you know, Romans had become so lazy that they'd taken their armor off and, you know, were exhausted by marching. You're like, ooh, not sure about that one. But certainly the aftermath of the Battle of Adrianople is to blame ill discipline, the wrong religion, taking your armor off, not paying enough attention to the good old-fashioned Roman legionary. And I think that those are knee-jerk reactions rather than sort of serious addressing of the issues of Roman armies in the late empire.
So you think that we can see, for instance, Vegetius's treatise as a response to things like Adrianople? And does that color our idea about the late Roman army?
I think so. I mean, Vegetius is, again, lots of dates that work for Vegetius's treatise, but 383 is probably around about the time.
It's you know, in the decades after Adrianople.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas we, you know, we think that there are several other treatises that probably aren't written because the Goths haven't won yet, and you know, we're still talking about the glorious Roman army, and you're like, well, you wouldn't be saying that after. But it's a concern, and there seems to be people trying to address concerns, mostly manpower issues. But I think that the Vegetius and several of the other letters and responses are, you know, there's orations by Libanius, which seem to be addressing, and he's interesting because most of the responses after the battle are by Christian authors who blame Valens' Arianism for the defeat. And they talk about the, you know, that there were omens that he was going to die and be burnt to death and we wouldn't find his body and all that sort of thing. Whereas Libanius actually comes out and in front of Theodosius himself says that the soldiers who died at Adrianople were no less brave than the soldiers of old, which is really an interesting take from a pagan author.
You could probably make a case that or ask the question whether the accusations against the army, certainly the Roman era contemporary accusations, are not rather misdirected, and we should look more at structural issues like this, you know, the split in the empire, the, you know, tax issues, all of those that made it much harder for, I mean, even in the high imperial era, we tend to forget it's not a small empire. It's most of Europe with something, I think the estimation is around Trajan, something like 50 million inhabitants, and the borders are supposed to be controlled and much of the empire policed by something like between 400,000 and 500,000 soldiers. That's it. That's if you spread them out along the whole Limes, that's not a lot of people.
Yeah,
and and they managed to hold out for most of that period because there's unity of command. There's a sort of clever strategy of holding off difficult people on the borders. And if there's, you know, if there's a breakthrough or a revolt somewhere, there's usually enough time for an army to be collected, if necessary, from elsewhere to beat up those people, and then they won't come back for a while. And then the later Roman Empire, there's no more unity of command. The tax situation is more difficult, and there's pressure on the borders from many directions at the same time. And it's the old strategy of sort of counterpunch, if you have to, doesn't work anymore. And then you get the defense in depth, basically. I mean, that's been argued. You have the people who are supposed to hold the border and act more or less as a tripwire. And then the comitatenses and perhaps the emperor himself with his guard will come and redress the situation. But if that happens in the east, in the northwest, in sort of the Balkans at the same time,
you're in trouble.
It's like whack-a-mole.
Yeah, I think you're right though. I think the army are made a scapegoat. Obviously, Valens dies. Most of the major commanders die at Adrianople, and so the army are made scapegoats for the failings. I think also, like you were just saying, that lack of unified command, Valens doesn't go in person. You know, he's off. He's in Antioch wanting to mount an eastern campaign. He doesn't sort of go, oh, okay, it's serious enough for my personal attention, until early 378. He's been sending commanders who have been behaving poorly and getting beaten for 2 years before he sort of gets to the party. So I think those issues, absolutely, there are more than just soldiers causing issues for the Romans.
Right. So in conclusion, not as crap as they are often made out to be.
Yes, but controversial. That's a hot take when it comes to late Roman armies.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Okay, so why do people love my Total Body Bar workouts? Because they work. My clients get an amazing workout and great results. I'm Andrew Rogers, professional dancer and trainer, and my Extend Bar classes are fun, only 30 minutes, and proven to help you get sculpted, lean, and strong. And right now, you can stream my Extend Bar classes for free on the Beachbody On Demand app. See how effective these workouts truly are. Start for free today at beachbody.com.